You're listening to No Plot, Only Lore, a podcast about games and the tables we play them at. Your DMs tonight and every night are Josh and Chris. You can find us on all podcast platforms or check us out at noplotonlylore.com. If you like what you hear today, please rate and review the show and share it with everyone you've ever met. Welcome back to No Plot, Only Lore. This week brought to you by The Ho, everyone's favorite seedy tavern located in Cedarsproke. I guess it says Cedarsproke. I'm not entirely sure what a proke is, but Cedarsproke, when you are done from a hard day of studying at Earthhome College, why not head down to The Ho for a cold drink and a warm fireside chat with many of the town's visitors. That's The Ho. H-O-E.
That's a really important distinction.
Does that make the seedy tavern part a pun?
I mean, yes, I think in a couple of ways. Like, because you don't necessarily want to go to the Ho H-O. I mean, you might, depending on what type of adventurer you are.
But depending on how long your day's been.
Yeah, fair enough. But like the H-O-E, yeah. Now that you mentioned that it is a pun, I'm never going to get that out of my fucking head. That's really annoying.
Sorry.
Now it feels like it's no. Go ahead. How are you?
Hi, this is hosted by two Canadians. So looking at Cedarsproke as a whole, it has a druidic college. So we've got druids using hoes at seedy taverns. Like, this whole thing is just pun upon pun upon pun.
Yeah, I now think that it is probably less about the town's visitors and more about, like, the local farmers showing up and, like, swapping stories about growing crops. I don't think you would ever be able to tell that I grew up in a farming town.
We've only mentioned it every other episode.
No, but it's like, I don't think we've ever mentioned that it's a farming town. We've mentioned the town, but we just call it like a shitty little town.
I feel like there's an assumption that rural Alberta is all farming, but
and oil.
That's just me. Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah. Mostly an oil town, but there is a lot of farming too. But yeah, I don't know anything about farming at all. I accidentally took an agriculture class once and hated it.
Yeah, and like it's weird because like even like Sherwood Park is a suburb; it's not a farming community at all. And yet, one of the high schools had like a whole like farming course and like animal husbandry and stuff like that for like no good reason. But
my least favorite time of year is like early spring and then like late fall when they do the cattle movement
where you
huge trains of cattle trucks going through both like Edmonton and Stettler, right? And just the entire town smells like manure for like a day.
Yeah,
it's the worst. Anyway, D&D.
Dungeons and or Dragons.
So, I didn't want to keep pushing the Steal Everything series this week, and I figured instead of stealing stuff, we would try and come up with some new stuff.
Isn't that just stealing, but a different flavor?
Yes. It was inspired by Joey Stadelman of the Ad Lib Heroes podcast. I mentioned him a couple of times before. He's my old DM from forever ago.
Right.
And in that podcast, he has a version of orcs that I'd never seen before.
Ooh, okay.
So in his mythology, orcs originally worshipped Grumsh. And there was a splinter group of orcs that moved away from Grumsh and started worshiping other gods and being like more integrated into the rest of society. And the Grumsh worshippers were eradicated, just completely destroyed. And so the orcs in his world now, like the true blood orcs in his world now, are all cultists who have gone through some body horror shit to ascend to orcdom.
What?
They are turning themselves into orcs through worship.
Okay. That's certainly a choice you can make.
Right?
I don't know if I've ever heard of something operating like that in any world, but
I mean, there's like transformation spells, and like the direction that I took it, I actually sent him a message about this after I listened to the first couple of episodes of his podcast, and was like, hey, is this like the Reavers from Firefly? Right. Like, where you've just got these like crazy body mod motherfuckers who are running around with like chains hooked into their eyelids and stuff. And he was like, well, we didn't really want to lean into the horror side of stuff, and we didn't want to like do forced conversions. But that's immediately where my head went, of just like, you tie down an elf and you force him to convert to Groomsh, and then you do some body horror shit to him and make him into an orc.
It's like the creation of the White Walkers. Like,
yeah. That's... They didn't want to go in that direction. They wanted to go like less horror and more adventure with it, which I respect. But like, my head immediately went to the darkest possible places.
Right.
And that got me thinking about like some other versions of that I've seen. So like, Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman put out a series called The Well of Darkness. And I guess they decided that the existence of like hill dwarves and mountain dwarves suggested the existence of other types of dwarves, like plains dwarves sea dwarves, and I guess air dwarves.
Elemental dwarves of all types.
The only one that they actually did for that one was like plains dwarves, and they were just like hardy dwarves that lived on the plains and rode horses and were like more Mongolian in theme, if I'm remembering correctly.
You mean they rode ponies?
I don't recall if it was ponies or like actual horses.
Okay.
I mean, you have to get like a ladder out to
horse
if you're a fucking dwarf, but like, I can imagine that still being kind of intimidating, just like a huge stallion with like this tiny guy with a giant ass warhammer on it. Right, like, how did you convince that horse to carry you, you tiny motherfucker?
It's, you don't see the rider, it's all just horse and warhammer.
And I mean, like, I have horse fear anyway, so just imagining that is like doing some things to me. But yeah, they did that, and I thought that was kind of neat. And then Eberron did a really cool thing with drow, where the drow lived in Darkest Zendrick, which was like the world's Africa analog.
Right.
And they lived in a, like, in tribal communities, hunted down giant scorpions to steal their, like, armored plates for armor, and then used scorpion venom to tattoo white tattoos on their skin. They're fucking cool. They're fucking, like, the Eberron drow are, I think, my favorite version of the drow.
Okay.
And that's just because they did something fucking weird and new with them, right? Like something that I had never seen before. And so I was thinking that maybe we could take a look at some of the classic or maybe not so classic things that go on in D&D and see if we can brainstorm ways to make them like cooler or unique or personalized to your world.
Absolutely. I will say there's another variant that I will bring up that I have always liked. Now, I probably should have researched this if I thought about it at all before right now. But when shut up. When I listen to
Josh reads our notes like 5 minutes before we hit the record button.
that 5 minutes is that's too generous. So when I used to listen to the Penny Arcade podcasts a lot when they were doing their live play stuff. But there was one that was done, that was, I think it was DM'd by Jerry as opposed to him playing in it. And it was a Dark Sun campaign. And now I don't know if this was a creation of Jerry's or something that is actually canonical. I, again, did not look it up because I didn't think about it until right now. But he described elves as nomadic dune runners. They had incredible elven endurance, and like all the characteristics of like basically a long distance sub-Saharan African running tribe, and they more or less lived in constant travel and would travel as like a herd of elves across the dunes. And you could, like, and they would travel in large enough herds that it was like, I don't know, seeing, you know, like the in what's that, the Lion King, where like the whole herd of Gnu, like they, when they stampede, and then you see them like move as like a whole unit, like that's how elves move out in the desert. You can see them out there, like with the dust kicking up behind them, and then they'll, the something will catch the attention of the herd, and then they all wheel together, and you know, if you're an elf, the reason they, like, when they get to a certain age where they can't keep up with the herd, then they are, like, left behind and they die out in the wilderness alone, right? So, I thought that was, like, a really fun little twist on that idea, is that this, like, this constant marathon distance running group of people across the deserts.
That is canon Dark Sun elves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Like, reputations of, like, being in fantastic physical shape, and they are like herders and thieves.
Yeah.
In some ways, kind of the Roma of the Dark Sun world, where they're just like moving around constantly from place to place, and they're going to show up and steal your children and also anything that is made of like something that glitters. So yeah, no, that's very much in keeping with the Dark Sun, elven theme.
Yeah, I like that cool version of elves. I the mystical forest and high magic guys are kind of done to death to me. I'm bored with them. I want weirdo elves.
Like one of the things that I kind of wanted to touch on with this is that, like, our conception of elves as like a fantasy species began with Tolkien.
Yeah, the way we view them in role-playing games?
Yeah, like we obviously stole that from Tolkien, because D&D was supposed to be Lord of the Rings, the war game,
right,
and then turned into its own monster over the years. But Tolkien took some pretty big liberties with the folklore around elves to begin with. And like,
oh, sure.
My personal favorite version of elves is the Ljósálfar from Scandinavian myth.
Yeah.
Where they're just like these light, airy spirits of the mountain that like come floating down to occasionally help people. More like fairies than the elves that we conceive of today.
There's a version of elves, it might just be like specifically from Iceland, but they are just like, they're more like a gnome. They are like the size of an action figure, and they like live in these tiny, you have to build them tiny little houses, and they are invisible, but they are there and tiny and messing with stuff when you're not looking.
Wasn't that okay? I don't want to be like irreverent to like folklore or whatever, but wasn't there like a Will Ferrell movie that involved like appeasing the elves?
Oh, wasn't that part of, didn't he do a movie about Eurovision?
I think so, yeah. I think his partner for the Eurovision thing kept going to like the little hill where they had the elf houses and was trying to appease the elves.
Right, because weren't they supposed to be the Icelandic team, and like that's like very much part of their lore?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, that was super cute. But like the other thing is that there's so much crossover in folklore, right, between like fairies and elves and dwarves and gnomes and goblins and like all of the things that I've mentioned could be considered fairies.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And all of the things that I've mentioned could be considered spirits, and all of the things that I've mentioned could be considered like types of elves. And so like there's a lot of levers that we can fiddle with to try and like customize these things. Cause like you've got everything from light, flowy air spirit to Tinker Thief, Dune Runner, to play with when it comes to elves. So I'm going to leave elves alone for the moment. I kind of wanted to jump into like one of the weirder the species first. So let's talk about Dragonborn. I want to talk about Dragonborn.
Okay.
So the Dragonborn is one of the newest like core species in D&D. Came around mostly because people wanted to play dragons, in a game called Dungeons and Dragons.
Who would have thought?
And I don't feel like they've had a lot of time to breathe yet.
Oh, sure.
Right, like they came out in... Well, I don't remember which edition they came out in, but I know that they were formalized in 4th edition as like a standard race.
Yeah.
And then because 4th edition had that like huge group of people that hated it because it was World of Warcraft, we have only really had 5th edition to kind of explore those. But like I still remember like the first time I saw them, I was thinking about the Draconians from Kryn.
And like okay.
I imagined that playing a Dragonborn would be like playing a Draconian, and then you don't turn to stone when you're killed, I guess.
Okay, that seems reasonable.
There are some obvious ways to make Dragonborn weird, and that is to use weirder dragons as the other half of their species, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. What would you consider like some of the tools that we can use to customize the Dragonborn?
Specifically Dragonborn?
Specifically Dragonborn. We're going just with Dragonborn for right now.
Okay. Correct me if I'm wrong. You're implying that the way to make them weirder is to change. Like the assumption when you talk about Dragonborn is that they're half dragon, half human, right?
Or at the very least, like dragon. Like and ways that follow with the dragons that we understand. So like
yeah.
There are gold dragonborn, there are red dragonborn.
Yeah.
Etc.
Yeah. So your variation on that was changing the root dragon?
The most obvious. Like, feel like that's the most obvious thing that you can change is like go with an apocalypse dragon instead of like a red dragon. Or go with like I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, no, I just want a clarification because my instinct is to fiddle with the other half of Dragonborn. I understand that Dragonborn are not just like half orcs where they're just like whatever. I understand they're a full unique thing, but I like to treat them sometimes like half orcs where it's dragon plus whatever other fantasy race. So dragon plus dwarf or dragon plus orc, or dragon plus whatever.
Okay, so when you said dragon plus dwarf,
yeah,
that triggered something in my head.
Okay.
Which is that both of those groups are known for like hoarding gold,
yes,
and being greedy, and
yes,
having lairs under mountains.
Yes.
And I think that has some legs.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they've probably spent a significant amount of time in proximity with each other. Maybe there was a particularly seductive dragon or something. I don't know what happened in their history, but I think...
Super sexy dwarf.
Yeah, well, aren't they all? Hey, anyways, what?
That's one way to go with it. Like, the origin of the Dragonborn, I think, is another thing that you can kind of play with. Like, the...
Yeah.
Not the, like, mixing of species necessarily, but, like, the creation myth for them, right?
Because,
like, I think the basic idea is bards of every species want to fuck dragons. There is nothing that we can do to stop it. Sometimes that's going to make kids.
And see if you just flip it so that dragons of every species want to fuck bards, then...
Or even just not bards. Just, like, they're just horny. Dragons be horny.
Extremely horny dragon.
That sounds like the name of our next podcast, Extremely Horny Dragons.
See, okay. Speaking of things that triggered something in brains, like the... I can think of no worse thing in like a fantasy setting to be extremely horny, like an ancient, powerful, unbelievably intelligent, conniving, you know, super being like a dragon who just needs to fuck. Like
That's got some notes of Zeus.
Uh-huh.
right? Of just like chasing after you screaming, I'm going to turn into a swan and fuck you.
Yeah,
horny dragons as the origin of Dragonborn is admittedly hilarious. But like there's other things that you could do with that. Like, you know, a wizard did it.
Right.
Just like somebody's fucking with mixing people into dragons. They're like, dragons are cool and people kind of suck, so let's make people more like dragons, I guess. But I think that's a little tired. I think it would be even cooler if like they have an origin myth that they like are dragons.
Okay.
Right, like way back in the day, 10,000 years ago or whatever, like, you know, in a certain village, like long, long ago, there were dragons who wanted to walk like men. Right. And just like they have their own creation myth for how they're put together. And so you have this like long history for a species, like a long verbal history for a species that connects them directly with dragons, even though there's like, if you were to do DNA tests, there's exactly 0% dragon.
Yeah, they are not dragon whatsoever.
They kind of look like them, but they're more like lizards. They're just like trumped up lizard men that got fancy with it.
So. That's a very, like, we was Kangs vibe.
A little bit. A little bit. Just like, yeah, we were dragons.
Yeah.
Kings of the world. Where's your wings, you fucking lizard man? All right. So that was fun. Let's talk about elves.
Let us discuss an elf.
Let us discuss an elf.
So like, as much as we don't want to.
It isn't even necessarily that I don't want to. It's just like, it's the one that I think gets the most attention.
Yeah. All right.
Elf it up. So the things that I think that we can fuck with when it comes to elves are, we have the Tolkien elf, right? Like, we've got an entire Silmarillion about how they came to be and like why they came to be and why they are no more.
Right.
We've got the folklore. Ooh. From like Scandinavia and Great Britain and all of the other places that have had elves that we can draw from, like the Germanic elves, all of that. We have some other interpretations of like elf-like creatures that exist out in the world. Like there's a species of like slender, beautiful people from a Com myth that I'm familiar with that, I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but they are very elf-like. And so like that's a lot of stuff that we could play with. Mm-hmm. But like the commonalities, the things that like make an elf are, they've got to be pretty.
Yeah.
They got to have pointy ears.
Okay.
That's pretty much it.
I don't know if this is universal. I feel it's kind of universal, so I'm just going to bring it up. But I feel like in every variation of elf, there's something about their otherworldliness. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like the beauty that they have is otherworldly. It's like a little bit creepy.
Well, it's just they just seem disconnected from like the mortal realm in a way. Oh yeah, that's another thing I think that comes up a lot, is that they like are often immortal.
Right. Eberron did a thing that was really neat with elves. So like the thing that Keith Baker specifically wanted to play with elves was their longevity.
Okay.
And they made the entire government system for the elven continent based on age.
Oh.
So the older you were, the more powerful you became.
Yeah.
To the point that the oldest elves were turning themselves into liches. In order just to like, rule longer.
I was going to say, just to keep their power.
Yep. And so they became the quote-unquote Undying Court, which is a group of good-aligned liches.
Just that sentence.
Right? Who are ruling over the elven kingdoms for eternity.
Okay.
Which I think was like a neat lever to fiddle with. It's just like, one of the things about elves is that they do tend to be old. They tend to live a really long time. There was a great anime, and this isn't like a thing that we're like fiddling with, because like the elf representation here is very like standard Tolkien elf.
Yeah.
There's an anime that came out recently called Frieren that focused very much on like the elves and aging. And like the main character adventures with this group of people for 10 years, which to her is just a blip, right? It's like spending 2 weeks with somebody.
Yeah.
And then her entire life changes because of it. But by the time she realizes that her life has changed because of it, some of them have already died.
Oh no!
Of like old age. And so like she's coming to grips with the fact that like this life-changing thing for her that has taken like 3 or 4 decades to figure out, she can't really reconcile with
it. Right.
Because all of the people that are important to that are just fucking gone. And she's having to do it like generationally. Right? Like she takes in the apprentices of some of those people to be like her own apprentices and like companions so that she can continue their relationships generationally, which I thought was just fucking dope. And it was a really cool thing. And then like halfway through the anime, it turns into like a tournament arc, which I didn't care about at all. but like everything in the first half was fucking great.
it reminds me, I read a little brief thing that someone did from the perspective of like a dog who,
right,
like their offspring have stayed with this particular person over time. So they talk about like generations of their family being looked over by this, what they once thought was like an immortal, you know, powerful being. And then they realize like, hey, like their hair's starting to whiten too. And they're, you know, they move like stiff, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, this was the human that looked after my father's father.
Yeah.
And now he is old.
Yeah.
And it is weird that he's old because they live so much longer than we do.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that I read that and cried. It was very well written. And I have no emotional control. So it definitely did some tear jerking for me. Yeah. But like that kind of view of the age of elves. And also, I think like they're not always, but typically inherently magical.
Oh, yeah, very magical.
And I think, again, that comes back to, like, Tolkien's view of elves as being, like, from another world. They have ancient knowledge that not everybody has access to. They live forever, so they get, like, more time to study magic, all of that shit.
Yeah.
But, like, what I would probably do with elves would be to, like, really strip them down to just real pretty pointy ears, and then fuck with everything else.
Okay.
Right, so, like, maybe I would keep the age. Like, I would keep them long-lived.
Right.
But, like, ditch the forests for, like, a very urban lifestyle. Right? Like, they've had forever to build cities. They've had forever to build cities that accommodate specifically their needs. They like cities.
Yeah.
Right? Bows and arrows can get fucked. They've had enough time to invent guns. Right? Like, just a bunch of six-shooter cowboy elves running around doing cowboy things in, like, cities based on the Old West.
Okay.
Right? And, like, I think one of the easiest levers to play with them is setting, for sure. Like, if you just take the elf and put them somewhere else, then you get, like, a different flavor of elf. So like take an elf and put them in a Chinese court.
Yeah.
And it becomes a very different thing than putting them in a desert as per Dark Sun.
Yeah. So here's what I would fiddle with.
Alright.
I like the age thing. I think that's kind of core to elves. Honestly, I think you could lose the ears. I don't care about the ears at all. What I care about is this, like, I like the idea of a class in, or like a group or class in society that exists alongside of and yet outside of society for an extended period of time. And tinkering with the idea that, like, one, like, they have such a different perspective on things. They are not going to have the same like morals and values that we will because like time warps them. But the number one thing I like fiddling with is what a long life does to a person. And like the idea that, like, you know what? I think it's kind of inevitable that you will lose your mind a bit. And the longer you go on, the more of it you lose, because it's just not really possible to, like, stay completely sane and focused and, like, engaged for that length of time. Like, after a few hundred years, you kind of, like, well, fuck it. Like, I've done or have experienced everything that's, like, possible for a person to experience in, like, a normal sense of a life. Like, I have lived 10 different... I like the idea that, like, they'd, like, almost completely change themselves every 7,500 years. And just be like, all right, fuck it. I lived, like, a full life of a human in this period of time and doing this specific way to completely reinvent myself. This is an idea that is kind of stolen a little bit from... a version of it from the 40K universe, where their space elves, the Eldar, walk down different paths of, like, mastery of, like, weapons and stuff like that over the course of their life. Where they're like, well, I'm going to take this amount of time and just, like, completely devote myself to perfecting this art form or whatever it is. Art form, fighting style, something. But,
like, in humans, we usually only have a career for about 7 years. Right, like, we change careers every 7 years on average. So, like, imagine that stretched out over 600 years.
Well, exactly. And that's the thing, is you iterate on that so many times, and then you're still fucking alive. And you've run out of, like, known things to do. And you're like, God damn it. I'm, like, their midlife crisis happens at 600 years after having experienced the sum totality of human experience as an individual person.
I don't know if I would necessarily go crazy as much as just, like, unable to connect, right? Like, in kind of the same way that vampires do, where, like, they're speaking in a bunch of different anachronisms because they've lived so long that there's, like, talking like us and also doing jive talk and also talking like a, like, Elizabethan and also speaking Old English occasionally. Right, like, just, like, sprinkling in words and phrases that nobody has used in 400 years.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't even necessarily know if, like, the madness angle is a good one, but I think also, like, you could present it as madness and then just have it be like he has no idea how to interact with people.
Well, right? Nobody
has his life experience.
After that sort of point, it's not, like, straight up madness. It's that they just start pursuing weirder and weirder things in, like an unquenchable desire for, like, stimulation. They are so starved of stimulation. There's nothing new under the sun. They are bored out of their minds. So they're just trying anything that they hope will get some sort of reaction out of their body.
It's like inventing new dog breeds.
Yeah.
Because you've got the time. Why not?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I was like, what if I could make a dog inside out? Like, I'm just going to start doing that.
Well, and then you get, like, a wizard did it, like, portions of a fantasy world where it's just, like, you can describe it as being messing around with things that man ought not, or you can also just be like, sorry, an elf was bored.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, and then, like, you know, they touched on this in 40K, but, like, the pursuit of, like, extreme experience, you know, in the 40K world, they went to such extremes they created a new chaos god out of their, like, revelry or whatever. But, like, yeah, like, just how, you know, when they talk about, like, people being insane because they just have so much money that they, like, nothing, there's no answer that's ever, like, actually a no to them. Mm. I feel like the same thing happens with infinite amounts of time. Because, like, time is money, you know?
Well, yeah, not just that time is money, but, like, it's the only indispensable resource, right? Like,
yeah.
Everybody only has so much time, and how you use it for stuff is kind of a differentiating factor between people's lives. Yeah, no, I like that.
Yeah.
Let's get away from elves for a minute.
Well, as far away as we can.
As far away as we can. Okay, let's go mind flayers.
Okay.
So, like, we've talked about a couple of species. We talked about dragonborn and elves. I want to kind of touch on monsters a little bit, because like I feel like there are some monsters that are very standard.
Yeah.
Mind Flayers don't get a lot of variation.
No.
And I think they could.
Okay. The only variation that I know of are the, like, gnomish Mind Flayers that we've run into in my campaign.
Okay. Just, they're really small and can only eat small brains? Is that...
No, no. So have you, you haven't touched on the Rime of the Frost Maiden at all?
No, I've never played through it.
Okay,
so they have a, through the book, but I've never actually played through it.
They have a version of Mind Flayers in there that, spoiler, like, aren't just straight up evil weirdos.
Ah, for fuck's sakes! But that, like, that's the only thing anybody ever does with them is try and make them good.
They're not good. They're just odd. And so you take all the weirdness of a gnome and combine that with a Mind Flayer, and then just go to town with it. So, like, we were playing a straight-up D&D campaign, and halfway through, we got laser guns.
Okay.
And they do the interdimensional travel thing all over the place. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I think they're fun.
The thing that I would want to maybe look at for Mind Flayers is kind of the same direction that I would look at customizing vampires.
Okay.
Right, so like, it's a creature that needs to consume other creatures, specifically intelligent creatures, to live.
Right.
Right. So like, if we imagine that the standard-ass Mind Flayer is their version of Nosferatu.
Right.
Then, if we're using like Vampire the Masquerade as a like template, what does the Ventru Mind Flayers look like? Right.
Like, I see.
You have your like very posh, high society, like hidden in the shadows, manipulating governments type Mind Flayers, mm-hmm. who are like using illusions to make their tentacles go away, or maybe they're just like they're out in the open with the tentacles, but they've managed to convince people that they're not a threat.
Right.
And then you've got like the evil skulking, like wizard type Mind Flayers, or you've got the like ones that are skittering down the wall to try and like suck the brains of some drunk as he's leaving the bar. Like, there are so many variations of vampires that you could use in a Mind Flayer direction that I think would be terrifying.
Yeah. No, as you describe it, I'm like, that doesn't sound fun at all.
Right? Like, if your players are expecting your Mind Flayers to be like the lords of the like Underdark floating through the realms, or they're like traveling across dimensions in their like weird cephalopod ships.
Yeah.
Then having one scrabble down a wall to grab onto their head and then lift them up onto the roof and just like dangle there eating their brains. I love everything about this.
that does sound like something you would like,
right?
But you also, like, we know that, you know, canonically you are more into doing horror elements and stuff in your games than I am.
Yes, I'm much more into horror elements, and my players have given me carte blanche to get as weird with it as I want to, to the point where, like, occasionally I've had to sit back and be like, look, I did a thing, I didn't ask for your consent first, so like, let's chat about that. And they were like, nah man, fucking do it. Like, whatever that was, it was fine. You did a bunch of weird body horror shit, and like, people were talking about like new limbs ripping out of their like torso. Fucking roll with it.
I do appreciate like your particular group's willingness to just like embrace like new emotions and experiences and not like shy away from them.
It's not a unique quality for my groups. I think that that's something that I don't know if that's something that I engender, or like that's just the type of person that I like draw to my groups,
or is drawn to you,
or is drawn to me as a person. But like, it's a commonality through a lot of my groups where people are just like, yeah, fuck me up, let's
make it weird. I want to cry.
Yeah, I want to feel new emotions about your gelatinous cube. Let's go.
So,
but yeah, like I think that Mind Flayers in particular are ripe for horror stuff for sure.
Yeah.
Also, I think one of the directions that I would probably want to play with Mind Flayers would be, so like they did this in Baldur's Gate 3, and I think that they fucked it up. Okay. It's the only part of Baldur's Gate 3 that I didn't actually like.
Oh no!
And that was the Seramorphosis thing.
Who?
The thing where you turn into a Mind Flayer.
Oh, right, yeah, okay.
The process of becoming a Mind Flayer. I think that you can absolutely play around with that. Because, like, part of the problem with... Is it Setamorphosis or Setamitosis or something?
Hey, I don't...
Whatever fucking word they use for it. The process of turning into a Mind Flayer. The way they talk about it is just like you're doing normal person things and then 10 minutes later you're a Mind Flayer.
Right.
And I hate that.
That doesn't make sense. Yeah, yeah.
No. I want it to be like a Wolfman type change.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right.
Oh, why am I all sweaty? What happened last night?
Yeah, and like you wake up and you've got this weird metallic taste in your mouth. And like you're covered in blood and you don't know where it came from and you don't know if it's yours.
Yeah.
Right. And the first thing you go to is fucking werewolves. Right. So you're like looking for remove curses. You're like chatting with the local clerics and stuff, being like, hey, got some lycanthropy, got to get that handled. And then they like wake up the next day and all of the clerics are dead because your mind flayer self was like, cool, I guess I got to kill those people to remain a mind flayer. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, again, just like really embracing the horror elements of that and doing something weird and cool with it.
Makes sense. I have no notes. I kind of love Mind Flayers as they are, and I've never really approached altering them.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe this is just like me in general, but there's certain things where I'm just like, that is a classic archetype and it doesn't need to be like iterated on. I'm happy for it to be the same, you know, as to like today as it was ever, you know.
I guess like part of it for me is that I always want to be finding something new in my games, or like I don't want to be bored because I'm allergic to boredom. And right. I don't ever want to present something to my players and they're like, ah, shit, here comes this thing again. Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If I am going to have Mind Flayers in my game, I want that to be for a purpose, and I want that purpose to be to scare the shit out of my players.
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right.
I just think they're scary enough. Like, I am happy with their level of scary.
That's fair. I disagree.
Okay.
I disagree with your happiness. I want them to be as scary as possible. I want you to be scared of my mind flayers.
See, and I don't feel the need to have to, like, I don't know, steam clean the shit out of the chairs at my table every couple of weeks.
You just throw them out, you get new ones. All right. This is taking longer than I thought. This might turn into a series.
It might, yeah. Let's fuck with races or whatever.
Well, yeah, like let's fiddle with levers for a few episodes. But let's talk about, do we want to do it in the monster or do we want to hop into items?
Oh, let's do an item. We've done a couple of like playable races. We've done a monster. Let's do an item. Yeah.
Okay, so the two items that are on the list that we've got that I kind of wanted to talk about in particular are the Deck of Many Things, because it's so fucking iconic to D&D, and the Reliquaries of Vecna.
Okay.
Right, because you got like the Hand of Vecna, and the Eye of Vecna, and the Left Testicle of Vecna, and like whatever it is that we've preserved from this guy. And again, very iconic for how those things work. So let's talk about the Deck of Many Things. Have you used the Deck of Many Things
in your games? I have, not in my games per se, but I have used it in the game that I was playing. Mm-hmm. I I don't like introducing it into games that I run because it's too much work. Like, let's just be honest here. I don't know if you saw some of the clips that came up from Brennan's episode with what's his face there? Oh shoot. I can't remember his name now.
I don't know.
He is Zach. Zach.
Right, Zach Oyama.
Yes. So it's their, what is it called, adventuring party or something like that?
Yeah.
Where he talks about DMing. The argument that they're getting into for that episode was railroading versus open world.
Mm-hmm.
And Zach pointed out, I think, probably the most practical answer to, like, why do you like railroading your parties when you're DMing? And it's like, hey, man, I did a lot of fucking work. I don't want to do a whole bunch of extra work that may or may not get used.
Right.
I want to respect my time as much as theirs. And frankly, at the end of the day, I want a more curated experience for the whole party.
That sounds very much like Zach Oyama. And given that, like, he had a podcast that he was DMing on for a while that he has stopped DMing for, because I think it was probably too much work.
Well, I mean, his justification is probably similar to mine, where he comes from a narrative creative writing background. And the thing about the particular type of writing that we did, I say we as in Zach and I, we are not, don't worry, we're not affiliated. When it comes specifically to comedy, improv is nice, but improv still needs boundaries, which some people would call railroading. But I think even you get better punches out of, like, actually crafted stuff. You have to do the
setup and payoff, right? Like, you have to have that structure when you're writing comedy or it doesn't land.
Right. Yeah, you get the time to build it, and then you get the ability to call back to it, plan callbacks. And the same thing happens in writing an adventure. You build certain things, and you build, you know, specific important characters or items or locations or whatever, and then you call back to them. You set the hook, and then you reel them in.
My DMing is much more jazz, right?
Yeah.
Like, I have, like, a four chord progression that is, like, the home of what it is that we're doing, and then I just riff off of that, whatever it is that we're doing. And so, like...
Yeah, and jazz sucks, so...
Thanks, July.
No, so bringing it back to what the original point of this is, the deck of many things, while iconic, for me, it's just a deck of feels bad for a lot of the cases, both as the DM and as the player. There's so many just bad things that can happen in the deck that, you know, we're really just rolling the dice for, like, no good reason. So anytime I've introduced something like the deck of many things, my iteration has always been to tune it into a progression tool that has, like, rewarding payoffs. It's not just, like, complete chaos. I understand the kind of player who loves to pull that lever over and over and just see what comes out. Mm-hmm. But they are a frustrating entity for both a dungeon master and for other players at the table who just want to progress. They're the kind of person who, like, plays a board game and it's like, I'm just here to do whatever. And then they wind up kind of, it's that, like, playing chess with a pigeon kind of thing. Where they just strut all over the board and shit everywhere. and you can't, like, it ruins your gameplay experience because you can't parse or rely on anything that they're doing to have any sort of meaning or direction behind it.
So I almost never play with the deck of many things. And yeah. My reasoning for it is, I guess, similar. Not so much in that, like, it takes a lot of work or that it's frustrating. It's just, like, for me, it's more like the deck of big swings.
Yeah.
Right? And so when you're drawing from the deck, you either get something that's really good or you get something that's really bad, and there isn't a lot of in between.
Yep.
And while I understand the appeal of that to a certain type of player, and it's definitely entertaining in, like, actual play media to have somebody pull a card from the deck of many things. There was a Dungeons and Daddies had the deck of many things, like, early on in the campaign, and it wrecked some shit, right?
Because
they were exactly the type of players who would pull three cards willy-nilly and just be like, cool, what's up?
It's the deck of Chaos Goblins.
So my iteration on that is usually to make it like a deck of smaller swings. Right, like you have a deck of cards that have much smaller, more localized effects that you can pull from. You're not going to get a wish. You're not going to summon a demon who's going to, like, create a contract with you. I don't even remember half of the things that are in the deck because they're all weird. And they're really hard to, like, even for somebody who plays, like, jazz, right? You can't have somebody show up with an oboe and start, like, blaring random notes as loud as they can, which is exactly what the deck of many things does.
I like your idea of it's the deck of a couple of things.
Like, you draw the thing, and for the rest of this session, get a +3 bonus on stuff. You draw this card and roll once on, like, the epic loot table or whatever, right? To get, like, a magic item. Smaller, more localized, easier to work around objects. Unfortunately, it has a lot less appeal in that case, right? Like, it's no longer the Chaos Goblin tool that players are, like, some players are hoping for. So I usually name it something different. I would never actually call it the deck of many things because that sets expectations that I do not want my players to have.
The deck of some stuff.
The deck of smaller things. Reliquaries of Vecna. Cut off your hand, put Vecna's hand onto it, and achieve ultimate power.
I have never liked the base Reliquaries of Vecna in the first place, so I'm always happy to iterate on the idea of it.
So the one that I'm always kind of drawn to, and I think this comes back to, like, my appreciation for Norse myth, is the Eye of Vecna. Right? The idea that you have to, like, blind yourself in one eye for a chance at magical power by stuffing a dead eyeball into your eye is one, it like really touches on my horror sensibilities. Because that's gross and terrible. And also I've got, like, weird eye stuff. So, like, if you want to scare me, do eye stuff. And then two, just like, I don't know if this is true for, like, all versions of the Eye of Vecna, but the version that I like to play with is it's not a guarantee.
Right.
Like, you may have just lost your eye and stuffed a dead eyeball in there and now you have an infection. My eye is not providing me the, like, night vision and true sight that I was expecting, but it is dripping a lot of pus. But yeah, I don't know. The tying it to a specific deity has always kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Because, like, I rarely play with the pantheons as they exist in Forgotten Realms.
Same.
Almost never play in Forgotten Realms to begin with. So, like, the idea of doing something that is specifically tied to a god of evil in a realm I never play in doesn't really do it.
Yeah, I can appreciate the kind of person who wants to have, like, the world fully formed for them and they're just kind of playing in that sandbox, but specifically when it comes to Vecna, I kind of don't give a shit about Vecna in particular. There are other gods of death and whatever that are cool, but Vecna to me is a snooze fest. If you're going to cut off body parts, go ahead and do that. I kind of like the idea that like every body part is plug and play.
Left testicle of Vecna.
Yeah, I've talked before about my half orc paladin that was half an orc, parts sewn together. I think if you're going to exist in a fantasy world where like you have spells that regrow limbs and reincarnate people and whatever, that like surgery should be a lot more cavalier. As long as it's attached to something that's alive and getting like some fluids, then a wizard did it, and we'll figure it out from there.
Just got like a couple of hands on top of your shoulders for like grabbing stuff.
It's just like, for me, like there's no such thing as like a permanent like disability, if that makes sense, in like some of these worlds. Where it's like, oh, you have like a bum leg. Well, let's just cut it off and sew another one on there, and then bibbidi bobbidi boo, you can walk again.
Right leg of Vecna? I don't know what abilities that would give you, but I actually just, like, calling back to one of the earliest parts of this discussion, I was just thinking how terrifying it would be to have an incredibly horny dragon with the testicle of Vecna. We're going to have to make this a series. It's,
yeah, that's
too many things.
I've got so much to talk about. There's races that I want to talk about variations on that you don't even have listed here as a possible race. I put
the Kendra on there just for you, man.
Fuck you. I went and grabbed the Tome of Heroes that Cobalt Press put out that I had been fiddling around with a lot lately. Just because as poorly balanced as it is, there's a lot of creativity in here that really speaks to me in a fresh way. And one thing I wanted to talk about in particular that we're going to talk about in the future here is Warforged, and they have an interesting take on Warforged in here. And we've talked about that barbarian I made, who they have interesting takes on Minotaurs and other hybrid species, stuff like that. So yeah, we're definitely going to come back to this idea of iterating on specific species and monsters and items and go from there. But I think there's some significant meat on these bones that has yet to be chewed.
Hey, thanks for making it all the way through this episode of No Plot, Only Lore. If you're looking for more, you can always find us at noplotonlylore.com and on all the very best podcast platforms. If you like what you heard today, please share, rate, and review the show to feed my never-ending need for attention and validation.